Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Have you got game? Got game on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet590.ca.
This week, huge and long overdue news from the makers of FIFA 16. Time to get inked with the review of Splatoon. Plus, Christine tackles one of the most anticipated games of the year. And we take a lap with an in-depth look at NASCAR 15.
Have you got game? The Lowdown.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. My name is Bowman Qureshi. Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun are with me around the table to talk video games for another week. Boy, we have a busy, busy show this week.
I'm turning my hat around. It's a serious week. I've been in a serious position.
Are you ready to put the show over the top? Is that why you turned your hat
around? Yeah, exactly. I've been prepping.
Yeah, making one hand. Movie references that are 30 years old.
Was there anyone else in that movie other than Stallone that we can even call out?
I have no idea. I don't remember anybody else. I don't even remember who played his kid. Was it his own kid? No, that was Rocky V.
No, that was Rocky V, yeah.
I just remember hearing someplace that Stallone took that movie because they paid him so much money and he thought that no one would ever see it.
Well, he's pretty right on some points.
That movie is a classic. It's terrible, but it's a classic. Yeah, it's terrible. But what we are going to talk about this show, not arm wrestling or arm wrestling movies, although we already did that. Yeah. We're going to review Splatoon a little later. Christine, you're going to review The Witcher 3.
Yeah.
We're going to talk some NASCAR. Brian, you did an interview earlier, and we're going to play that.
Yep.
We got lots to do. FIFA 16, some big news coming up in mere seconds about women finally being part of the latest edition of the game. So we got a lot coming up. Stick with us at GotGame590, Sportsnet590.ca is the blog, iTunes, and tune in for the podcast. I do want to quickly mention right off the top, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be switching our time slot to 8 o'clock in the morning on Sundays rather than 7. So if you wake up at 7 o'clock on June 14th and you find out that our show isn't on, don't freak out. We didn't go anywhere. We just moved 1 hour further into the day. So I just wanted to let you sleep in. You know, you kind of earned it. So we'll let you sleep in a few more extra minutes. And then we'll be back to our 7 a.m. time by the time the summer wraps up.
As we mentioned right off the top, huge news when it comes to sports video games, and in my opinion, long overdue news. Women will now be playable characters in the newest edition of FIFA, FIFA 16. We wanted to get all the details, so we spoke to Nick Channon, who is the senior producer of FIFA 16, to find out why the decision was finally made to add women to the game.
First of all, I think this is one of the most important additions we've ever made to the FIFA franchise, and certainly something we're incredibly excited about doing. It's something that we've actually been working on for a number of years now. We actually created a prototype of a female character in our game a number of years ago, and we realized, you know, there was a lot of work to do it in the most authentic way that we could. FIFA is all about authenticity, making the best playing, the most authentic soccer experience. And we wanted to make sure that when we brought women to our game and the women's teams, we did it properly. So we realized from that prototype there was a number of things that we needed to change technically. The biggest was how we went about doing what we call our rigging and how the scale of our bodies needed to be changed. And we actually had to make quite a lot of technology changes to allow us to scale bodies in a different way to create, a much better replication of the female form. That actually has had a benefit that we actually can create more varied player scaling for the men as well. But that was one of the biggest changes we had to do, which has taken quite a while. On top of that, we've created a hair simulation to make sure that, with ponytails, that they actually move. You don't get too many ponytails for the men, so we've never done that before, even though players like Ibrahimovic didn't have sort of moving hair. They do now. We also wanted to capture the movement of the women, so we wanted, look, especially around running and walking and jogging. So we did that. And then, to obviously create that real level of authenticity, we felt it was important to go out and scan as many of the heads as we can, just to make them look, replicated in the game, look as authentic as possible.
So let's talk about how women will be featured in the game. You just talked about the decision to put them in. But when I put in my disc for the new FIFA, how will I be able to play as a woman?
So to start with, the women's teams, there's 12 of them. They're all international teams. We focused on international teams to make sure we got the best players we could, in the one place. You can go in and play them in our kickoff mode, which is just like a one-off game. Go and play a friend head-to-head offline. We also have them in a tournament mode, so you can actually play a women's tournament, international tournament, and you can actually play with your friends online as well. So we wanted to make sure that they were in multiple modes. To be clear, and I think, as we said in the announcement yesterday, women's teams will only play women's teams. That's to keep the authenticity, obviously, in the professional game. You know, as we know, there's the Women's World Cup and the Men's, and again, we've just kept them separated in the game as well.
And just when you play in the Women's World Cup or that kind of thing this year, for us in particular, it's a big deal because it's in Canada. It starts in a few weeks. Will that be part of the game? Will you be playing the Women's World Cup in Canada?
So we don't have, it's not licensed. You've got 12 teams, all international, so you can create kind of an international feeling tournament, but we're not a licensed product of the Women's World Cup.
I guess the question now then is, where do you guys go from here? I know, you know, this is the first time you're introducing it, and having dealt with EA for a long time, whether it's with FIFA or Madden or NHL, you guys like to really perfect things. So where do you guys go from this step going forward?
Well, I think, you know, just to sort of clarify, when we brought women into the game and the national teams the way we had, we wanted to do it right. That's why we've taken our time to do this. Building on it from here, and, you know, we've got a really great base with the implementation of it in FIFA 16, it's about fan feedback. See how people react to using the female teams and how they're using them. They'll give us feedback. They'll tell us what they think. And as we do with every area of our game, you know, we'll listen to that feedback and make our decisions based on that.
Well, I know for me, for sure, one thing that I've heard just in the last couple of days is, you know, parents with daughters and parents, you know, people who have young girls around have already said that this is something that they're going to think about getting for their kids, because we know soccer is the most popular sport in the world, and not only in a professional level, but just in terms of a registration, recreational play for children. Have you guys heard any of that type of feedback as well?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak personally. I mean, I'm living here in Vancouver. I have two teenage daughters who both play soccer. I coach one of them. And I think, you know, they're incredibly excited about, you know, this addition. And I think, you know, for me, I'm an Englishman who's lived in Canada now for 6.5 years. The grassroots game for both boys and girls is incredibly strong here. But, you know, female soccer here is incredibly strong. One, in the participation, but also the quality at a different, you know, what's great in Canada is you can play at different levels, but, you know, high level soccer here is just phenomenal. So for us, certainly me very personally, two girls are incredibly excited about the addition of this feature. You know, and I think, you know, spot on, it'll bring people to our game that maybe haven't tried it previously, or if they have, obviously wanted to play with women players, and, you know, and now they can.
So that's Nick Channon, the senior producer of FIFA 16.
And this is just a quick memo we saw when the FIFA news was announced, which the three of us unanimously think is fantastic.
Sepp Blatter is back in.
Yeah. No,
two
not
days
that news.
After
the news
half
that, no, when the news was announced that women were going to be included in the FIFA 16 game, the vast majority, like 98% of people, were thrilled about it, as they should be. But there was a few people who were tweeting not only, like, their disapproval, but just ridiculous, misogynistic, insecure things about women and being in the game, and references to kitchens and stuff like that. And, like, honestly, it's 2015. Even if it was 1985, those tweets would be out of place. Mostly because Twitter wasn't invented yet. But still, that attitude is preposterous. Get over yourself and, like, try to join the rest of us in this current century if you could. You're listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. My name is Moman. Brian and Christine are with us as well. Going from one slightly controversial thing, as the FIFA mentioned, you mentioned about Sepp Blatter, because not the actual game, to another one, the game hatred.
What's controversial about Sepp Blatter being reelected 2 days after half of FIFA is arrested?
Nothing.
What could be controversial about that
nothing,
at all?
Nothing at all. He's not crooked. Brian, we talked about it for a long time. There's been lots of buzz about the game hatred. Mostly
I feel
because,
like, this is more like Christine's story.
Yeah? Well, let me turn my back to you and turn towards Christine.
Especially considering Christine got interviewed on TV multiple times.
That's true.
I know. He's mentioned this a lot. I think it angers him.
Yeah.
It gives him the hatred.
So let's get to it.
Yes.
Hatred, the game, is finally out.
It is.
After much talk and discussion and people throwing fits over it, it's here.
Yeah.
And
there were no riots so far.
No.
It came out, obviously, just on PC. It is rated M, X, the highest possible terrible rating you can get.
Adult only.
Adult only, which means it won't be coming to any consoles. And it is out.
In video games.
I am very curious to see how well this game does or does not do.
You mean, like, sales-wise?
Yes. Okay. I'm curious. And I mean, because we've been talking about this for a while, and not only us, but a lot of other news and gaming sites have been talking about it. And it's curious to me that if we have really promoted it and people will be interested in it because of that, or if it's just one of those things that people will see on the magical Steam sale window and think, oh, well, let's play this fun little game where it's just about some everyday genocide. Whatevs. It'll be curious. I'll be curious to see what their big numbers are, especially for the first week. And I won't be playing it because I have an Apple and it is like 8 years old and it doesn't work.
Well, here's the thing. I haven't heard of anybody that I know who is going to play this game.
Yeah.
Do you, either of you two know of anybody, even gaming journalist wise, that we know who is going to play this game? Well, I don't know anybody yet.
We did have that conversation where we were going to try and trick Patrick Luciani into playing it, not knowing what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that if he wasn't getting married in a week, but the fact that he's getting married a week from now, I don't think he has time.
A few people tweeted me when we first started talking about it saying, in general, they were just curious about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, they're a fan of the shooter genre. It's a third-person top-down, so they want to just see what it's, and it's not a super expensive game, so the curiosity gets the better of them, and, you know, I would be curious to, if you played the game, if you have purchased the game, tweet us. Tell us what it's like. Tell us if the hype and the paranoia over it is worth it or not. As a journalist, I have noticed that sometimes when we do hype things like this, the hype is not worth it in the end. And that the reason this kind of chaotic, paranoiac hype comes out is because this is the only way that the game gets any advertisement.
Right.
So we create the kind of hoopla for what will probably or what could probably be an absolutely atrociously terrible game.
While Christy was picking at her hoopla, I was over here on the Steam webpage, the webpage where they use to sell video games on the internet, as Valve tends to do. And I am on page 7 of the popular new releases page. And I still have yet to find Hatred on this list.
So not so popular.
Maybe they're not carrying it at all.
No, they're carrying
it. Oh, yeah, they are.
Okay. I mean, I can just put in Hatred right now and I'll find it. Yeah, Hatred, it pops up as soon as you put it on there.
I think you're right, Christine, in the sense that I think whoever buys this game, I think most of the people will just buy it out of curiosity. Which, I mean, I guess that's why you buy any game. It's because you're curious about it, really.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think this game even more so is the people who go through and like, oh, I want to know what all the hype is about. And they're going to go and get it. At GotGame590 is our Twitter account. GotGame@sportsnet590.ca is the email address. Let us know if you are going to play it or if you have zero interest in playing it or what you think.
And you won't be streaming it on Twitch because Twitch has banned it. Mm. So you won't be able to see any gameplay there. But I'm sure they're somewhere on the internet.
I wonder if all this banning is like music to the developers' ears.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah, I assume that's kind of what they're going for.
It's an Adam and Eve scenario. Don't eat the fruit. I want the fruit. I want the fruit.
That's right. You don't make a game like this without the backbone of having controversy kind of push the sales.
Yep. So just let us know what you think. Tweet us or email us. Brian, before we go and wrap up the segment, there's a particular arcade machine you want to invest in.
So basically, Bandai Namco about 7 months ago put out a trailer for what they call the Star Wars Battle Pod.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be something that you can go play at like Dave and Buster's up in Vaughn. And it literally is a pod you climb into and then they have a whole bunch of scenarios inside the video game that you can play. It's a big arcade cabinet that you can climb into. You can actually buy one of these now. They're custom making them for either $35,000 if you want to get the cheap model or $100,000 if you want yours with leather and like a different paint job.
Yo, if I'm getting one of those Star Wars machines, you better believe it has a custom paint job in leather.
Yeah.
No, I didn't say it was a custom. It was just a different paint job.
Oh, forget that then.
It's like either the symbol for the Rebel Alliance or Darth Vader.
Now, there is no doubt in my mind that if I had the money, I would be buying one of these machines.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, look at these. These are beautiful machines. I want one.
They are pretty nice. Okay, and guys, I think as a giant fan that you are, it would be something that would be perfect next to your collection of, say, Batman things.
Yep.
And I'm sure you could find somebody to custom paint it with, like, you as a Jedi. And
of course.
Yoda on your back.
Well, I'm just going to put it out to both of you. My birthday is in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's only $35,000, so it's like $17,000 for each of you.
I don't like you that much.
I'm sure you can swing it.
I really don't like you that much.
I already plan to get you a copy of Hatred.
Oh. It's okay. I'll need it to get out my vengeance swing for the fact that you're not getting me this.
Vengeance!
All right. We got a lot more coming up in this show, including reviews of Splatoon and The Witcher and talk about NASCAR. That's all ahead on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. We've got game. Do you... In the game.
You're back listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun are with me at this table. My name is Momin Qureshi. At GotGame590 is where you can follow us on Twitter. We got a lot more to come in this show. Brian, we're going to talk a little bit of NASCAR 15 coming up in a few minutes. Christine, you're going to do a review of the much-anticipated, long-awaited, much-talked-about, maybe even ballyhooed-about, The Witcher 3. No, just The Witcher.
The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt.
Yes, that's what it's called. This is a little bit more complicated than the what game did you review a few weeks ago that I could not get the name right? Something. State of Decay, that's the one. And it had like a super long title.
State of Decay Year One Anniversary.
Sure. Whatever it was.
You know what? I'm on Steam right now. I could probably just
Sure you can. The game I'm going to review now, though, is one called Splatoon. If you listened to last week's show, you know we talked to Nintendo Canada about it. If you missed it, you can go back and check it. It was actually a really good interview. Also online, we interviewed a parenting expert who talked about why that game maybe is a good shooter for you to start your kids off with. Now, this
State
game...
State of Decay Year One Survival Edition.
Now, Splatoon is a game that we first got our eyes on at E3 last year, the three of us, and we went and we played, and it was super fun, and I remember Riley from Game Rant played with us, and we got all competitive. And I thought, you know, this game looks really good, and it's really the first original IP, new IP from Nintendo in quite some time. They've really been riding their sort of core 7-8 characters that they recycle into different games all the time. We all know who they are: Mario, Zelda, Donkey Kong, yada yada yada.
The lady from the Wii Fitness game.
That's right. Yeah. So if you don't know, this game is a third-person shooter. But Brian, you I think very nicely call it baby's first shooter. But that's not meant to be in a derogatory way. It's because it is very kid friendly, because instead of shooting bullets, you're shooting paint and you're inking up places, but it still has similar premises to some of the multiplayer modes that a Call of Duty or a Halo or a
It's very Gears
has.
Of War.
Yeah, very Gears of War.
You walk up with someone and you can curb stomp them.
No, you're not doing that. Even if you are, it's very in a very playful way on like a very spongy board. So
all the paint guns actually have chainsaws on the end.
All the characters in Splatoon are squids, and you take
squid kind of, human hybrids.
That's right. So at one point you're walking around and you're a human and you've got tentacles coming out and a tail at the back, and then you can transform into a squid. And the only way you can move as a squid is if you ink up the floor, and you can move in your color ink. Brian, if you're there in front of me and you have pink ink and I have green ink, then I cannot swim my squid in your ink. It'll actually start to kill me, is what it will do. And there are a few different modes. First of all, you start off by making your player, and then you enter Inkopolis, which is where all the stuff takes place, which is, you know, of course, Nintendo being very
cutesy. Very cute.
Yeah, very cutesy. That's a very Nintendo thing to do. And, you know, it starts off with this hip teen kind of news program with these two girls who, frankly, are so annoying, and I could not, like, wait to get through what they had to say every time. And, you know, when you load it up, you have to go through their news report every time. I'm like, all right, let's just get on with it. It's very annoying and slightly terrifying, to be honest.
Sounds very much like Battlefield Hardline, where every match starts with a news report.
Again, similar to games like that, where the more you play, the more you'll level up, the more better gear you can get, which means the better you'll get at the game, and so on. And you'll move up levels, and you can buy better stuff, and, you know, you'll progress in the game. So that's one. And the way you do that is you go into the battle arena and you do battle.
Now, just to ask you, all the paint guns that I remember seeing were basically Super Soaker-like models. Now, were you buying better Super Soakers?
Yep.
Were you like getting like the red one that had the two tanks on it and the double barrels eventually? Nice.
Yeah, essentially the way it works is the more coins you collect in the game, the more of a better weapon you can get. And then you can upgrade some other things like your clothes and stuff like that. And of course, the higher you get, the better your gun gets and the more damage you can do.
Do you get coins for winning the match, or are the coins just scattered around the...
No, it's as you play. So, for example, there's different modes, and you just collect them as you go. So, the way it works is you have to go and get into a match, and they're all online. So, the only way you can play with somebody locally is if you play a 1v1 sort of dojo battle. Otherwise, you have to go in, and even if you're with me, Brian, we have to go and play in a 4-on-4, 8 matchup. And I'll tell you this, for the first while, I really had a hard time getting into a match. I would go into a room, 3 people would be in there, 4 people would be in there, 5 people in there, the clock would count down and say, we have to leave the room. There's not enough people online. Now, I'm going to give it...
Wait, you can't get into a game unless it's 4-on-4?
Right.
That is BS.
That's a lot of people.
I'm calling jerk move right there.
Why?
I've never actually seen a good shooter, whether or not it's a first person or a third person, that requires you to have like a specific number of people play
a
4-on-4? Yeah. I mean, like you look at like all sorts of shooters out there right now, they do have like a minimum limit. Like you can't start the game unless you have 4 people, but they're not going to hold you back until you have a specific
number. There's other modes you can play. It's not like the game is like locked down and you can't do anything. There's other things.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the impression.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No. There's other things you can do in the game. I just had trouble getting into games at first, but then part of me also says up until today, which is a Friday, the game wasn't available to the public. So the only people that had the games were people who were reviewing it. And so I'm assuming from today onwards, the numbers of people who are playing the game will be much higher and much more frequent and much more readily available around the world than it would be at any other time. So that'll be better.
Still, though, locking one game mode behind, you have to have 8 people on or else we're not going to let you play. Still, kind of a jerk move.
Maybe. So what I will say about this game is it is super, super fun. And I really, really enjoyed it. And it's a really good game to get if you you want to play online and have a good time. Third-person shooter. There's also a mode where you can go and you have to, you meet this really old kind of creepy squid guy who says he was once part of this, fabled Splatoon tribe, and they went and they did all these missions, and now people think I'm a crazy kook, but there's something that's been stolen and you have to help me out, and you have to help me out by doing these following missions. And so you go with them, and you go, and it's kind of like Super Mario Galaxy like missions where you're out on all these things and you go down the quote-unquote Mario pipe, but in this case it's like a sewer grate and it launches you from platform to platform, and you've got to complete all these missions and you got to take out all these things and climb walls and take on all these rolling balls that are trying to get into your ink and stuff like that, and you take them out. That's kind of a neat other side mission to it. But after all the talk about Splatoon and the fact that Nintendo was in a seeming rut, they have really pulled themselves out with this game, I think. It's a really good game. I really enjoyed it. I think people should get it if you're into this at all. And if you are kind of turning your nose down on it because you're more into Gears of War or Halo, don't. I think you'll get just as satisfied in it. You know, when I spoke to Heather Potter from Nintendo Canada last week, she's like, oh, no, we've heard from people who like other shooters who really like this game too.
And then it's a decent shooter.
Yeah, and you think, well, what else is somebody from Nintendo going to say? But yeah. It's true. The more you play it, the more I played it, the more I thought this is really fun and you can get just as competitive and just the same sort of satisfaction in it, and it's got different challenges because of the squid aspect and because of the fact that you can't go into somebody else's ink, so you've got to outsmart them, and you can hide, and you can play strategy and stuff like that, and that really figures into this game.
It sounds like Nintendo has done a pretty decent job of this game. I will admit that I'm a little disappointed that there's this guy that you can go find and then it becomes a platformer, because we know Nintendo has already done enough platformers. I'm more upset that you don't go and find that guy. It turns out he's Charlie Sheen from the movie Platoon.
Oh, you never know. There could be Easter eggs.
He's like a half squid, half Charlie Sheen, man squid who has to face the moral crises of war and the duality of man.
I think that's more likely to happen in Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah, exactly.
Than a Nintendo game.
I'm just going to wrap up my review saying this game gets a good solid 8 out of 10 for me. It's one of the best Nintendo games to come out in a long time that is an original IP. For a system that really needed a boost, they got it in this game. So Splatoon, very good. You are listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Brian, now we're jumping right into your territory.
Yes, not an original IP at all, but one that's very close to my heart.
Right.
NASCAR the Game,
which
2015.
I'm sure is shocking to many of our listeners that you are going to talk NASCAR.
Surprise! Dusenberry Martin Racing.
And this is the first time they're making a NASCAR game, right?
Because
I know Ed Martin was involved in the previous one.
Yes, Ed Martin, one of the people who are actually Dusenberry Martin Racing guys. He is one of the people there. He's actually been working with, say, EA Sports when they did it. And then when it moved over to Activision, he went along, and then Deep Silver was in there someplace. So the franchise has changed hands a lot in the last couple of years. And now the two guys, Tom Dusenberry, who was with the NASCAR franchise long before even EA Sports had it, Ed Martin, who's been along for the ride ever since, they've come together, they got the rights back, they're going to be taking the development internally into the Dusenberry Martin Racing Studio. So I had a chance to talk to Matt Dusenberry, who I have no idea what the relationship is with Tom Dusenberry, but I assume there is one, and we discussed what NASCAR 15 is, and actually also what Dusenberry Martin Racing is.
Can we start off this interview with a bit of a history lesson? I was just wondering, where exactly did Dusenberry Martin Racing come from as a company? How did you guys come together? And also, how did you get the rights to the NASCAR video game? Because all of a sudden it seemed like Deep Silver was going to have the rights going forward, and then here comes the email, here comes the press release. Oh, hey, we're a new company. We got the rights. Here we are. We'll be doing this. So how did it all come together?
Yeah, absolutely. Dusenberry Martin Racing has a deep history entrenched in NASCAR, and it comes from our founders, Tom Dusenberry and Ed Martin. They both have been in the industry for years, Tom was the CEO of Hasbro Interactive, and Ed was an executive producer. And that's where they met and worked together on products like NASCAR Heat, Dirt to Daytona, some of those classic NASCAR titles. Tom went on to work in games and interactive space, and Ed worked for EA Sports, Utechnix, and Duesenberry Martin Racing now. So he's been around the NASCAR video game realm for the last two decades. And Tom and Ed remained family friends, you know, after they had finished working together, and came together when an opportunity presented itself to purchase the NASCAR license and assets from Utechnix. So Duesenberry Martin Racing was born on January 1st, 2015, and we've been full steam ahead ever since.
Now, in terms of actually putting out video games, I think you guys might have a record. I mean, you were only formed about 4 months ago, and here you are 4 months later, roughly, putting out your very first video game, NASCAR 15. And I have to know, how did that happen? Because it seems impossibly fast.
Yeah, absolutely. NASCAR 15 is available for $19.99 exclusively at GameStop, and we launched that on May 22nd. And part of what we had purchased was assets and a season update to the NASCAR 14 title. So that's where the NASCAR 15 title came from. It was already under development when we were purchasing the rights.
Okay, so if this is a season update and a chance for you guys to put all the drivers in the right cars and make sure all the paint schemes and the sponsors are correct, the game modes, offline, online, all the things that have been in the NASCAR games for the last couple of years, will they all be in this version of NASCAR 15?
Yeah, absolutely. It's similar to NASCAR 14 from a gameplay perspective, with enhanced multiplayer bug fixes and an updated roster for the 2015 season as well.
Something I do want to talk to you guys about before we do run out of that time is Utechnix. Now, they've been making the NASCAR video games for the last couple of years. They started off really rough. They had a lot of problems in the first couple of years, but in the last couple of years, they've made products that are actually decent and worth your money. So I was just wondering, do you guys plan on continuing working with Utechnix? Will they be making the video games? Will you guys do the business? Or are you going to take the development of the games internal and handle everything yourself?
Yeah, we're going to go. We're going to go in a different direction, and we're excited about NASCAR 15 or NASCAR 16, excuse me, which will be available on the new generation consoles, Xbox One and PlayStation 4, in late 2016. And we are months in development of into NASCAR 16 already. And you know, we're also really excited about our launch of NASCAR 15, and hopefully, this product will give fans what they need for the time being while we're working hard on developing NASCAR 16. But, you know, to be able to pick up NASCAR 15 today for $19.99 is great to hold you over while we're working on other products.
That's Matt Duesenberry of Duesenberry Martin Racing talking about NASCAR 15. Now, Christine, The Witcher 3. People have been talking about this for a long time. Lots of hype coming in. You've spent your week playing it. Don't say anything. We're going to find out how it was next on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network, coming at you. Momin Qureshi, Christine Tubb, Brian Calhoun, all around the table.
Coming at you. What, are we live on the ones and twos?
Yes, you got it.
What? No.
That is
nope. Nope. I'm sorry.
We just lost about 1,000 listeners.
Okay, I'm going to leave you guys. I'm going to go hang out with the guys from Tag Team.
Sorry. I apologize.
Back again. Check your director. Let's begin.
What is happening?
Make some noise. Boom, there it is. Now let's turn, Christine, to what I would say is easily one of the most talked about games of the year, one of the most hyped games, one that people were looking very forward to. And given how many games that have been pushed back and canceled, this may be sort of like potentially the biggest game of the year.
Possibly. Yes, possibly. I think all of the things that you said are completely correct.
We are talking about The Witcher 3.
The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, which came out. It came out last week. I didn't get a chance to review it on last week's show because it is 200 hours of gameplay.
I also hear you can't beat the game and like 100% it in one playthrough.
Sissy.
Well, the game has something like 36 different endings, and there's a complicatedness that comes with this game that's both frustrating and endearing to the fact that this is basically how RPGs are going to be or should be on the next gen system. This game is complicated. It's beautiful. It's long. It doesn't really talk down to the players. But first of all, let's get to the number one question people have asked me about this game. If you haven't played the other two Witcher games, can you play this game? Obviously, the hype machine for this, as you said, moment was giant going into this.
Huge, yeah.
And I am somebody who has never played the Witcher game. I saw this at E3 last year and I was like, this is happening. I have to play this game. But I also was concerned. Can I go in absolutely blindsided and play this game? Yes. The answer is a resounding yes, you can. They do have a really nice introduction to the game, which kind of brings you up to date on the last two games. You're still playing as Geralt of Rivia, who has been the main character through the entire series. And it kind of leads you through the first game, the second game, to where you are now.
So they basically Mass Effect it.
Yeah, they really do. And even in conversations where you meet, because you meet a lot of people that you have met in previous games, they do not a heavy-handed recast of what's happened, but they have it in kind of a conversational way where he's like, so what have you been doing since we last did this? Oh, well, I'm doing this. You remember when we did that?
How's the kids?
Yeah, but it doesn't really feel forced. It feels like it should. Like, it's an introduction, and this is what it is for people who've never known. There are times, especially in the first few hours of the game, where conversations happen, and I really wish that I had played the previous games, because I know I would definitely get more out of the conversation. There's actually one conversation you have with someone, and they ask you questions about the previous games, and I had to guess. I'm like, I'm guessing that's what I did? And his responses were, okay. So I don't know if I guessed correctly or if I didn't guess correctly.
Seems like a rather needless little interaction there.
Well, what I thought about it later was maybe that's the way the game judges whether or not you've played the other ones or not. Like, maybe it's kind of like, all right, she doesn't know this, you know? Because this game is so deep. Like, it has so many levels to this game that it really wouldn't surprise me if they're like, oh, okay, this person doesn't know this backstory about that. So maybe when this person, this other character connected to it comes in, we will have the option for them to ask, so what have you been doing since we last invaded wherever?
Is that how everybody starts every conversation?
No.
What have you been doing since we talked like 5 minutes ago?
No, thankfully it isn't. Like I said, this game definitely does not talk down to its players. One of the things, though, it's impossible not to notice how beautiful this game is. The Witcher is breathtaking at times, and like I can't even. It's so beautiful. Like, there are scenes where you're on your horse and you're at the top of a mountain and the sun is setting, and you even get that kind of like sheen at times. It's so bright.
That Charlie Sheen?
The Charlie Sheen, yeah.
Are we back to Splatoon again?
At times,
like Charlie Sheen Splatoon ripoff?
No. At times it's so bright, it's almost like too bright to watch your television because they've just blasted you with sunlight in the face.
That's good to hear, though, because I remember when this game first came out like 2 weeks ago, a lot of people were complaining about the graphics. They said it was downgraded in some way.
Yeah, on the Xbox, I'm supposed to be the lowest of the systems. Well, apparently PC had a lot of problems with it as well, but patches have come out for the PC already. But I had absolutely no problem with these graphics. I have a pretty decent television, and I didn't feel like I was losing anything at all with this. I mean, the colors were beautiful. The life was beautiful. Like, the scenery of it all was just, it was gorgeous. The art department, bravo. You've made a beautiful
wow,
looking
Christine's
game.
Actually clapping. Yeah.
I am. It's really stunning. And, you know, because you're in such a mythical world where things like griffins exist and, you know, they really went out of their way to make them look as realistic as possible. Like what it would look like if you were fighting a griffin.
Okay, so they made a realistic looking world. What do you do in it?
You can kind of do anything in this game. It's huge. It's massive. Like, I can't overstate the fact that it is massive. It is apparently 20% bigger than Skyrim. And I thought Skyrim was the biggest game I would ever play in my life.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would ever think when they played Skyrim that, you know what, someday I'm going to play a game that's bigger than this.
The thing that I really like about this game, too, is that the towns are big, too. Like, some of them are small little villages. But when you go into cities, you're in a city.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Thankfully, you know, it would take you forever to go in and steal things from every business and walk in and explore. So not all of the buildings you can go into, but just the scope of them and walking around, like it really feels like you're in the town and you really kind of get to know where everybody is.
I love how I asked about interactions with the world, and Christine's first like remark about what you can actually do is go from town to town stealing things.
Well, that's what I always
that's
do.
That's not that what is, you do when you go to new cities and new towns?
No.
That is how I play my RPGs.
I've been with you in Los Angeles. I know differently.
So there's lots of things to do in this game. Obviously, most of it, again, is fighting. You go through. There's fetch quests. There's escort quests. There's destroying beautiful creatures. There's solving mysteries. You know, all the kind of fantasy RPG things that you would expect in a game like this.
Now, how difficult is the gameplay? Because I remember previous games, even though I haven't played them, just doing research on them for, say, this segment of the show and stuff like that, they were really difficult in the sense that, okay, here's this one guy. You have like three different swords. You got to make sure you're using the right sword.
Yep.
And you got to make sure you're using the right potion on yourself.
Yep.
And you have to like mix the potion yourself. And if you don't get right. the right ingredients, you can't mix the right potion.
Yeah.
That, Christine, sounds tedious.
It's all still there. You have two different swords. They do two different things. Definitely, if you pick up this game, play the tutorial. I cannot overemphasize how good it is to play the tutorial, because even the fighting mechanics are very complicated. Like there's six or seven different ways you can fight people, and they'll give you tutorials on how to do your magic and how to shoot crossbow as well. Like you basically get the gamut of how to play an attack. And it is at times a little complicated and a little overwhelming at first, but I found it was, I guess by maybe hour 10, I was in the zone. I could figure it all out. I was like, yep, I know how to fight these things, of course. And then somebody would come over and kill me. The interesting thing, though, that one of the ways that I really do wish that this game was better when it comes to potions and crafting, because when you look at games like Skyrim, they've really made it more of an interactive experience where this just kind of, you gather things and you just kind of click something and it makes the fancy potion that you need. And you can, I like to have a little more interaction with my potions. I like to kind of find one by accident and, oh, look, this can do this. Whereas in The Witcher, you kind of walk around and you can find recipes in, as you're stealing things from other people's houses, you can steal recipes.
A lot of stealing in your gameplay.
Well, it's looting. That's the staple of how get anything in
every
RPGs.
Game has it. They just call it loot. Call it looting, which really is just a fancier word for it. Well, actually, it's not really fancier. It's
you're
maybe
stealing.
Lowbrow.
Yeah, but you loot from like a chest in like an abandoned cave. You don't go into a city.
That chest is somebody's.
That's
just
right.
There randomly.
That somebody's
belongs
there.
To somebody.
Except for like
that somebody stuff.
The chest is supposed to be like blind to the skeleton that's right beside it. Who he won't need anymore. Christine's just like, yeah,
right,
you walk
even
in the first city.
But my bet is that the person who is now a skeleton stole it from somebody. I don't think the skeleton person is the original owner.
You know what? We don't even have time to have this argument. Christine, please continue.
I forget. So I wish that the crafting system was a little bit more complicated, I guess, is what I'm looking for. Where this game really, really shines is in the missions. The missions are at times exceptionally long. Like there are some missions where it's like, don't start this if you're just going to play a couple hours. Because I just finished a mission this morning that I started yesterday morning, and then I only to find out that I had to finish another quest to actually get the ending of this.
No.
So I have to go and do another quest to get that, but I'm fine with it because the complications, like the kind of detail that they bring into these quests is kind of miraculous. Like you can definitely tell that these are taken from books because it's got such depth and the characters are so interesting. And like, it's not just a simple, oh, my wife has run away. What
right.
do I do about this? The backstory behind these characters are just even ones that I don't think I'll ever see for the rest of the game. But I know so much about them. Like, they've taken such detail into it. And that is what I hope more RPGs do and what I think a lot of RPGs kind of slip to the side for more battle-oriented things. I mean, there's still too much battle in RPGs now for my liking. But everything is just so interesting.
I love that. I love that they gave minor characters big, like, nice backstories.
It's fascinating. I do wish you could talk to a few more people in the town. You kind of have to walk around and try and talk to everybody because sometimes you'll unlock quests that you would have absolutely had no idea of getting until you were just like, oh, I'm talking. And sometimes two people are talking in the corner and if you're listening in, that'll unlock a new thing. There's so much to do in this game. It is kind of a fascinating game. It gives me great hope between this and Dragon Age Inquisition. I have great hope for the future of RPGs on the system.
Does it suffer from the same, I would say, not just Oblivion, I would say it's like the Elder Scrolls sort of franchise issue of like the same character talking to himself in terms of like the world. All the Elder Scrolls games, they seem to be populated so people.
Yeah, a guy who took an arrow to the knee?
Yeah, and he's talking to the other guy who's the same dude. it's always like the same guy talking to the same guy in that series of games, like literally talking to himself, even though they are two different characters. I was just wondering, how populated is the world of The Witcher? Do you have that sort of same issue?
There are a few times where there's a few peasants who always kind of have the same sort of conversation, but I do find that they're not so frequent that I've noticed them. And I've played the game for now, I want to say at least 30 hours. And I haven't really been found it tedious that they were so repetitive. So,
right.
And I think it also has to do with, especially in the smaller towns, are only populated by maybe 10 people. So, and usually when they're talking, it's something definitely to do with that neighborhood, with that area, or just about being poor.
Right.
So it doesn't get to the point where it's an ongoing joke, like an arrow to the knee or something like that. And that, again, I think is to a credit of really how detailed this game has gotten, where they've looked at what other games have done, I assume, and they've said, all right, well, let's not do that.
So we only have about a minute left on this episode of Got Game, so let's get your final summation and the delivery of the score. Did this game live up to the hype that was promised?
It did. It lived up to it and perhaps surpassed it. I was going to walk in. I expected this game to be good. I expected to like this game right off the bat. And it was way harder than I thought it was going to be. And that made me like it more, though, because I thought I would just walk in. There's 5 different levels of difficulty. So depending on how good or bad you are, you
what kind
can
of
kind
a glutton for punishment you are.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I like that it had that variety. There was lots of action. There was lots of conversation. It's a beautiful game. I'm excited for there's already, you know, obviously DLC coming. And I'm going to give it a 9.5. It was really, really good. And I encourage people, again, if you haven't played the Witcher series, get it. Go out.
Game
of
the year so far?
Maybe. It's definitely in the top 5.
How close was it to 9.9?
Well, good 5 years ago callback, Brian. Good 5 years ago callback.
It was close. I did have a few more problems with it, but it was very good.
That was the second applause break of the show. What is this, a sitcom? 9.5 out of 10 from Christine Chubb for The Witcher 3. That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for tuning in at GotGame590 on Twitter, Sportsnet590.ca, it's a blog, iTunes, and TuneIn app for the podcast. For Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.